You are listening to a sermon by Janice Kreider, recorded on Sunday, May 21st, 2023, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia.
The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgrmf.org.
On the wrong side of the story. 2 weeks ago, Rebecca Sack Mosley spoke to us using Habakkuk as her text. Later, she emailed me saying she felt bad because we seemed to be shell-shocked. Her talk was relevant to the congregation she spoke to in the morning in Ethiopia, where suffering is prevalent, but it didn't fit into our first world context. In chapter one of Habakkuk, there are phrases like, "Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not listen, or cry to you violence and you will not save? Justice never prevails, judgment comes forth perverted. People marching through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. The wicked swallow those more righteous than they." How do we understand these words? Are the wicked swallowing us up? Do any of us here on Zoom experience violence, perverted judgment, or have our dwellings seized? No, we are not experiencing this type of trauma. But there are groups of people, even in our city and province, who would resonate with Habakkuk's lament. I think of the street people who live near me and how they are hounded from place to place. Rosie and I are attending the Listening to Indigenous Voices sessions led by Bridget Finley, and those sessions offer a perspective from a First Nations point of view. Volunteering at the Newcomers Food Bank helps me see the impact of violence and corruption that refugees have endured. We Mennonites often hark back to being persecuted, losing our beloved homes in Switzerland, for example, because we did not baptize our infants or attend the state church. When some of my ancestors escaped Switzerland and settled in the Alsace, Louis XIV banished them in 1712. In those days, my ancestors likely resonated with the words in 1 Peter that were read, "The fiery ordeal that is taking place among you to test you, sharing in Christ's suffering. Like a roaring lion, your adversary, the devil, prowls around for someone to devour." Although martyrdom and suffering are a significant part of our Anabaptist history, there are other and opposing stories. In those other stories, my forebears may not have been explicitly and directly involved in making people suffer, but we took advantage of the results. From my family background, I'd like to share two of those other stories, stories where we were not on the side of suffering, but basically on the other side. We could label it the wrong side. And the first story is from France, and the second from Ohio. Leopold Eberhard was one of the princes of Württemberg. After a successful military career in his 20s, where he fought against the Turkish invasion, his father died and he inherited land around the city of Montbéliard, now in France, but which was not part of France at that time. While stationed in Silesia, he fell in love with a maid working at the court of the Württembergs and secretly got married. The marriage was problematic because she was not of noble standing, but that was easily solvable. He created a fictitious genealogy and made her a countess and her brothers counts of a small territory along the Rhine River. Later, he got involved with two daughters of higher standing, the daughters of a baron. He persuaded his wife to have them as ladies-in-waiting. Eventually, he divorced his wife and married the younger sister. All in all, with the three women, he had 18 children, some of whom were considered illegitimate. You probably wonder where this is going. He needed to support them in an appropriate lifestyle. However, the lands that he had weren't enough to bring in adequate income. It was the time of the end of the 30 Years' War, and the area was depopulated due to the war and the plagues. Leopold asked the local landowners that remained to produce their deeds. Many of these documents were lost in the wars or did not exist. And to put it simply, Leopold invalidated the deeds and expropriated their land and the large houses on them. The farming methods of the local peasantry, who could have been hired to farm the land that they lost, relied on traditional farming methods, and the income was not going to be enough for Leopold. He heard about Anabaptists banished from the Alsace in 1712. These Swiss people had brought new farming methods with them, especially with breeding cattle. They crossed their Swiss cattle with the local French ones, obtaining a superior breed called the Montbéliard, and that's the cow on your picture there. And the milk is used to produce Comté cheese. They incorporated manure on the fields and raised enough food to feed the animals adequately through the winter, and they were able to make more money from the land than the locals could. Leopold, needing a large and stable income, hired them to manage his various farms. And my particular interest is the farm, Les Senon, near the village of Dung, and you can see a woodcut of that. My Ashleman ancestors originated in the land around Bern, Switzerland, but they left, likely due to being Anabaptist, for more tolerant parts of Switzerland, where they leased farms. They probably heard about Les Senon through Anabaptist connections, and the three-generation family migrated there, farming at Les Senons for 10 years, and they eventually immigrated to Ohio. Others of my ancestors also leased large farms. The Anabaptists had their own ethnicity, culture, and religion, and did not associate with the local inhabitants. The Anabaptists were resented as they took over the big farms. Their ties were strong with each other, though, especially through their church in Montbéliard, where they got baptized at age 15, got married, and buried. Now the story from Ohio. When I use my Canadian passport to cross a border, I'm sometimes asked about the place where I was born. The passport simply says Wauseon, USA. I have to explain that Wauseon is a town in northwestern Ohio. I learned in elementary school that there was a Chief Wauseon. The athletic teams for the Wauseon schools are called the Wauseon Indians. And there's a local supermarket chain called the Chief. However, the real Indians are long gone. Northwestern Ohio is swampy. The indigenous people lived in some permanent villages, but also had temporary villages and camping sites scattered along the streams. They planted their cornfields and gardens near the streams and used the swampy forests for hunting, trapping, gathering wild fruits and nuts, and making maple sugar. By several treaties made from 1807 to 1817 between the U.S. government and the local chiefs, and I'm going to do some quoting here, all land north and south of the Maumee River had been ceded to the U.S. However, the treaties provided that the Indians could continue to use the land until settlement by whites necessitated their removal, and that when that time came, at the convenience of the government, with proper notice given, the Indians were to be removed, with the government bearing all expense and superintending such removal. Unquote. This deceptive and one-sided treaty was entered into after the natives had been conquered and reduced to helplessness. Attempts to move them to Missouri, northern Michigan, and Kansas began in 1830. Chief Wauseon made the long trip to Kansas to view the promised paradise, but was not impressed by the windy, dry plains with few trees. In 1835, the government employed a white man named Dresden Howard, who had attended the mission school with the young natives and knew their language, to persuade them to leave. Here are his words. "I found myself in my old friend's village, in a quiet little valley among peace and plenty. Game was plentiful, and potatoes and squash gave promise of an abundant harvest. All were pleased to see me. A great bowl of hominy and venison were prepared, enough for a feast. The visit commenced very enjoyably. But when the time arrived that I must disclose my errand, I found I had assumed a responsibility that I would gladly have given to other hands. We were obliged to spend many days, even weeks, in persuading and coaxing them to go. It was pitiful sometimes at these interviews to observe the silent tear swelling from breaking hearts steal down the wrinkled, dusky cheeks of the old gray-haired men." Howard's wife wrote this: "The saddest people I ever saw were the Indians as they assembled to be conveyed to a reservation in Kansas. One continuous pitiful wail was all that could be heard as they marched into boats to sail away from their hunting grounds forever. Some of the natives broke away from the group and went back to Ohio, and others returned because the local tribes in Kansas considered them intruders. But by 1850, only a few families were left." Who were these white settlers that necessitated their removal? "Many were my ancestors. My Lauber ancestors left their home in France near Basel in 1834 and initially arrived at a Mennonite community in eastern Ohio where they had connections, but land there was expensive or not available. Northwestern Ohio, being a swamp and the last area of Ohio to be settled, had available land at an attractive price, so they became pioneers there. My Stuckey ancestors also arrived in 1834, and later the above-mentioned Ashlemans settled in the area. In the 1840 census, which is the first one of the area, I find another branch of my ancestors, the Shorts. The area is now cleared, drained, and produces corn and soybeans. There are small woodlots and one area of virgin forest and a protected nature preserve, and many Mennonite churches." Unfortunately, these two stories are not anomalies. Consider Catherine the Great's invitation to Mennonites to settle land in what is now Ukraine. Pre- and post-World War II settlements in Paraguay. Settlements in southern Manitoba. And it continues. Paul pointed out an article to me in the April 21 issue of Canadian Mennonite. It's entitled, "Colony Mennonites Threaten Indigenous Lands." The article speaks of tensions between the colonies and the local Indigenous people. Colonists grabbing land that's not theirs, monoculture farming impeding Indigenous farming methods, sketchy application of Colombian laws, and so on. Returning to the Habakkuk verses that I quoted at the beginning, "O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not listen? Or cry to you, violence, and you will not save? Justice never prevails. Judgment comes forth perverted." Which side of the story should we Christians be on?